Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And Steve Nash was in the restaurant eating by himself, and he came over and he sat. And so, because he recognized me from PTI. And it was like thrilling for me because he's, you know, wonderful. And and it was great to talk with him for about an hour. And Todd remembered it, he said, because Steve posted pictures of himself there.
Oh.
So they got a big walk-in crowd as a result of that. So it was, so if any chef ever says, can I cook for you, just do it. Just
if do any it. Man ever says that.
Right.
This Speaking of that. Is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
From aspiring chef Richard Todd in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. May I cook for you? Maple smoked salmon on a plank, tender lemon glazed chicken in a clay pot, courtside, trackside, or right on the engine block, on a date, on a lark, seared, salted, sautéed, even steamed, flavored with mushrooms fresh from the bark. May I cook for you, the amazing Miss Clark. Isn't that lovely?
It is very lovely.
That's just absolutely lovely. All right, let's open the show with what I do best, which is get depressed. People say, oh, you're pretty funny, Tony. Well, I can tell you that all funny people have the same thing in common. All funny people. They're pessimists. They're not optimists. If they were optimists, they'd just be happy all the time. They wouldn't be sarcastic. They wouldn't be funny. They wouldn't look for a line. So I am pessimistic. And what made me pessimistic this morning was not only was I awakened at about 3 in the morning by thunder and lightning.
Huge storms.
Yeah, thunder and lightning at 3 in the morning. But, you know, that's okay. There was not heavy wind or anything. It was heavy rain straight down, but it wasn't heavy wind. And I had to take the dog out in the rain. And the dog doesn't poop in the rain. So we're sitting here waiting for the dog to start whining to say, well, I got to get out now. But I have noticed in the last 3 or 4 days, I am, as everybody knows, a creature of habit and routine. And I get up at a certain time all the time. That's just what I do. And I get the dog out at a certain time all the time. And in late May and June and early July, when I got up, there was not just light in the sky, it was bright. You know, 5:45, 6 in the morning, it was bright. 5:30, it was light. 5:15 sometimes, it was light. Not now. No, we're into late July, and the answer is not now. And so now, and again, today was a gloomy, rainy day. And it's not the average day, but you can tell, and you can tell at night. You can tell at night it is getting darker earlier than obviously around the time of the summer solstice. And we're heading into that where you lose not just seconds, but minutes in the morning and in the evening. And I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that.
It's lovely at like 6:30, 7 o'clock to go out walking and it's still light outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is
this is the long march towards the great darkness of winter.
Yeah,
right?
It's depressing me.
Yes.
I see it coming before others because I'm because that's who I am. I see the bad stuff first, not the good stuff. If I saw the good stuff, I wouldn't be doing this for a living.
Well, it is interesting that on the longest day of the year, like, you know, the most sun.
I'm depressed.
You're depressed because, it gets worse from here.
Right. It does. So I'm watching the Nats last night. Dominic Smith, by the way, is on a heater. He had 3 hits last night. He didn't drive in any runs, of course, because he's got like 4 home runs and 25 RBI. He's on pace for the worst first base power position numbers in the league. But, you know, he got some hits last night. The Nats are up 1-0 in the first. Lane Thomas hits a home run in Chicago. Then they're up 3-0 by the third. And I thought Patrick Corbin was cruising. He got through the first. If he gets through the first without giving up runs, he's usually pretty good.
It's a good sign.
And he was pretty good. I stopped at 3-0. I don't know. Maybe that was the fourth inning. I stopped. I just stopped. I said, okay, I've had enough. They're going to win this game. I woke up this morning to find out they had lost 17-3. 17-3. The Cubs scored 17 runs in a row.
Yeah.
Now, they scored a few off Corbin, but they didn't score them all off Corbin. What did Corbin give up? He went 5 1/3. He gave up 3 earned. The bullpen came in. Somebody named Amos Willingham. 2/3 of an inning. 4 hits, 4 runs. All earned.
Mm-mm.
Jose Ferrer, the pitcher, not the actor.
Not the great actor.
Came in one inning, 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned. that doesn't touch what happened to Paolo Espino, who I have liked for years.
Yeah.
Paolo Espino gives you whatever he's got. He'll come in five nights in a row, and he'll pitch for you whatever he's got. Last night, he had squadouche. He had nothing. He was in for one-third of an inning. He gave up seven hits and two walks, eight earned. My God, that's the worst outing of all time.
Yeah.
And what I like most about this, and I've talked about this before, for those of you who know the term Panglossian, it's like foolishly optimistic.
Okay.
Pangloss, from whatever book that is. Candide. I think it's Candide. Foolishly optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Davey Martinez. Look, I'm excited. Willingham throws strikes and Ferrer. Now it's just about where they want to throw strikes and how they want to attack hitters. What are you talking about? They got into the game. They got crushed. They got shelled. They gave up combined like a million runs. He didn't even mention Espino.
Right.
Because what are you going to say about Espino? Davey
yeah.
is always, it's not even looking on the bright side. Davey doesn't even acknowledge there's anything else. And after a while, you just say, why am I talking to Davey? But what, honestly, if I was the beat writer, I go, why am I talking to Davey? Because he's just always saying, he casts everything in the best possible light. They're like 25 games under 500. They're one of the worst teams in the league, and Davey's happy that his bullpen throws strikes. You know what happened to those strikes? They ended up in the field, right. Dropping down for hits.
Yes.
That's what happened to those. Briefly, nobody wants to hear about my golf. I shot 40 on the front yesterday. It's the best I've played in a long time.
That's fantastic.
I was really happy.
Voided the traps?
Yeah, until 14 and 15, then I got killed.
Okay.
But I had 40 on the front, and then I had 4, 5, 6, and 4 on the next four holes. So through 13, I was like 8 over. I was great. I mean, I was great. I was really happy. Then I got in traps, and I couldn't get out, and I made a mess of the scorecard. But I was really happy. Because I'd played so poorly, and I got back to Columbia, and from the Golds. I mean, it's a much shorter course, but I played well enough where I thought, okay, I'm really old, but wow, this is good. So happy for that.
And it was a perfect day to be out there yesterday.
No misery on that. I have a question. There's two things going on in soccer that seem to be important. I'm not a soccer person, obviously.
No, you're not.
There's the Women's World Cup, which is in Australia and New Zealand, coming up soon, right? Isn't that soon? Like
yes.
In the next week or so?
I believe so, yes.
And there is Lionel Messi's debut on Friday for Inter Miami. Inter Miami is a team in the MLS, the United States Soccer League. United States Soccer League's okay, I guess, but it's not, you know, it's not the Premier League. It's not La Liga. It's not anything like that.
Right.
It's not. You know, and Messi comes over here and he'll be really good. He's 35. Maybe he couldn't be that good anymore. Did he play for Barcelona? I mean, it's not. You know, I don't know anything about soccer. I'm the first to tell you. But maybe we should talk about Messi and soccer. And there's two people we don't have soccer people on, do we?
No.
And we had Taylor Twellman on, and wasn't he good?
He was very good, yes.
Wasn't he good? And Julie Foudy's really good?
Yeah, I don't believe we've had her on, but she's quite good.
Oh, no, we've had Julie Foudy on. Well, we've had her on PTI.
Okay.
She's really good.
Yeah.
And she was on a World Cup winning team.
Yeah, she's a very accomplished
She's really
player.
Smart. Stanford, all yeah. that. Really smart, really good. And I think Taylor Twellman was really good.
Yes, Taylor. I remember Taylor on
should
the show.
Should we try to talk to Taylor Twellman about Messi on Friday? Should we try that? It's the middle of the summer. Nobody's listening.
Sure.
Nobody's really listening.
I mean, it is quite remarkable, and I know there's money involved. But
I mean, he's getting paid a gazillion dollars.
Yes, a player of his caliber to come.
This happened with Pelé, of course, but that was 50 years ago.
But you covered that,
I did.
You remember the excitement, because it wasn't just Pelé. It was guys like Georgie Best and
Canalia came over, Beckenbauer came over, Cruyff came over. Yeah.
Yeah, but these were not guys at the peak of their career, nor is Messi.
Well, Messi isn't anymore, is he?
Yeah, but he's still, I think, even at his age, and I think he's, what, 36 or something like that, you know, that he's easily the best player in the MLS just walking on the field.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, should we try and get Taylor Twellman? I would like to get Julie Foudy, but excuse me, I don't know the time zone differences. You know what I mean? That's always a problem. What is the time in Australia? I understand it's tomorrow. It's not today. But what is the time in Australia when we're on and when we would call? because it might be too late, or she may. I don't even know if she's. You know, I'm assuming she's in Australia. I shouldn't even assume that. Yeah. I don't know if she's in Australia and New Zealand.
So it actually might work out.
You can't be in Australia and New Zealand at once because they're separate countries.
I don't have New Zealand on my world clock, but in Sydney and Melbourne, it's 10 past 10 p.m.
So that's not bad.
No,
they might be playing then, though.
Yeah.
But again, I'm sitting here. I don't even know if she's going. I don't know. But let's see if we can get them. I mean, it's because we should.
Sure.
We should be able to do a little bit of soccer.
Yeah.
And everybody knows I don't know anything about soccer, and I'll ask the obvious questions.
And I think, a lot of people may not be huge soccer fans, but they pay attention when the women's World Cup team plays.
Yeah, that gets very good ratings. Yeah,
and I just looked at this.
We're the best team in that. We've been the best team in that for, 20 years.
Yeah.
When we lose, it's an upset.
Yes. And
it's not like the men. The women are the best.
The men would be thrilled to get to the knockout round. You know?
I mean, people really need to understand why that is the case. Because a lot of these countries around the world, are not encouraging of women athletes.
Yes.
In the way that the United States has always been encouraging of women athletes. And so we've had the best team for a long time.
So I see Australia and New Zealand open play tomorrow at 6 a.m. and 3 a.m. And the United States plays Vietnam on Friday at 9 p.m.
Yeah. Well, we could ask.
Yeah, we'll reach out. Reach out to Taylor.
Again, she might be in Ohio.
Yeah.
I don't know where she lives or anything like that.
Yeah, not sure.
But she's really good.
She's terrific,
all
yes.
Right, good. So we'll take a break when we come back. Is it Sands or 40?
Sands.
Steve Sands from a long way away in Hoylake, England at Royal Liverpool. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are Jackie and the Treehorns. Brian Gibson writes, longtime Laura Little and drummer for Jackie and the Treehorns. Grateful for your past support of the band. I've attached two songs for your consideration. This is called No Blues. They're going to be at Zen West in Baltimore this Friday, July 21st.
Go see them,
yeah,
people.
Next Friday, July 28th, at the first of the reunion summer shows at St. Stephen's Church on Newton Street, just off 16th Street, Northwest in Washington, D.C., and Saturday, August 5th at the Quarry House Tavern in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. Jackie and the Treehorns are very, very good. We appreciate them sending music. This plays in Steve Sands, who was in England and Hoylake and Royal Liverpool, where Rory McIlroy won his British Open some years back. I think I got to start with Rory. I think that the fact that he won the Scottish Open, the way he won the Scottish Open, would seem to me makes him at least the co-favorite, if not the outright favorite, and puts an enormous amount of pressure on him. I know you really like Rory. I really like Rory. He has folded before under this sort of pressure. The one in Northern Ireland, I remember, at Royal Port Rush, he didn't even make the cut. What are your thoughts on Rory right now?
Tony, far be it for me to ever tell you, the most accomplished person I know in this business, how to start an interview, but I have never in 100 years with you started an Open Championship interview without you asking about the hotel situation.
I'm going to get to that. I just thought we'd get Rory out of the way.
No.
Okay, all right, wait. Let's start again. Steve Sands is at Royal Liverpool in Hoylake, England. Liverpool is the home of the Beatles. It's That's a rather right. industrial city, though not as industrial, for example, as Manchester, the home of the Animals.
Right.
And because Sands, you know, is our friend of long standing, and we are concerned about the hotel he's in, what kind of dump have they put you in?
This is the nicest hotel.
Really?
I've ever stayed at in any Open Championship.
Wow.
It's incredible. A, and you know this means a lot to me, heated toilet seat.
Oh, yeah. It's big.
B,
big win.
It's a double robe. Had to move these two huge robes out of the way so I can hang up the shirts and ties and the jackets and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Thinking about Q. Kind of like that scene in A Few Good Men when Tom Cruise sees all the clothes in the closet lined up. I'm just looking at them, thinking of Tony Kornheiser. Hmm. And, I mean, it's just the food downstairs is good. The bar is open late. The food is open well past midnight, so when we get done here late at night, we have a place to eat, and the room is big. It's you can't get the air conditioning down too low. You know, I get a little nervous over here with the AC pumping, but it's a great hotel, Tim.
What is the name of the hotel? What's the name?
It's way more important than anything Rory McIlroy does this week.
Okay, what's the name of the hotel?
It's like the Mal Sam.
Okay, so it's not a chain hotel. It's a
not a Best Western.
No.
Okay.
Local hotel.
Okay, you're not
local
in La Quinta.
New, updated.
You're not in the Hampton
no,
Inn.
By the way, here's another key over here, Tony, as you know, and you know this well. One faucet.
Yeah.
Not that weirdo two faucet thing that got piping hot and freezing cold on the right. It's one faucet. This is a great hotel, man.
Is it possible you will stay there after the Open and just live there for a while because it's so nice?
Zero.
Okay.
Zero chance.
Wilbon, where did Wilbon go? What's the one he went to?
Couldn't live here.
Wilbon went to the one where they're going to have the Ryder Cup. Adair something? Is it called Adair Manor or something like that?
Oh, yeah, Adair Manor. Yeah, the
he
Ryder
loved
Cup. That's the incredible charity event that happens every year. The Adair Manor is spectacular.
He loved it so much that he was considering trying to get a studio built there. He loved it.
Well, the problem with that is when they have the Ryder Cup there, people like Wilbon won't be staying there.
Right.
Like, you can't stay there because the PGA of America and also the European Tour, the DP World Tour, will be taking up all those rooms. He'll be staying in some dump near Adair Manor. But yeah. Adair Manor is
loved
spectacular.
He just loved it. All right, so I didn't really begin this way about Rory. I'm waiting a few minutes to talk about Rory, so we'll just mention Rory and the way he comes into this and the pressure on him.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Oh, man, Tony. I mean, we've gone through this now for almost 9 years. He hasn't won a major championship since August at the PGA at Valhalla in Louisville in 2014. All right, that's 9 years. That's a long, long time between major championships for a guy who won four of them from 2011 to 2014. A couple of things bode well for him. A, he won his Open Championship in 2014, a month prior to that, here at Royal Liverpool. Different golf course now, a lot of changes to it, but still great vibes coming back here. And he won last week at the Scottish Open. Now, that might not be a huge deal for a lot of people, but for Rory, he needed a victory. He needed to see himself cross the line. It's been a while for him. He won earlier this season, but it had been a long time for him. And he's the last guy, Tony, to win a PGA Tour event the week before a major and go on to win the following week's major. So I think that those are good signs for him, and it's a soft golf course because there's been a ton of rain. Right now, this blue sky is amazing. It's gorgeous out. But it's going to be a soft golf course, and he has played very, very well on soft courses, meaning that, you know, all the rain and it just not be able to bake it out here. There's no way to get it dry. And he's won his four majors on soft golf courses. So I think he has good vibes. Whether it's this week or not, we'll have to wait and see.
He is paired for the first 2 days with Jon Rahm and Justin Rose. This is a monster pairing. It's a monster a group that goes out there. Is that likely to help or hurt him?
Oh, I think it'll help him. First of all, it's a good tee time, meaning that it's not, you know, crazy early or crazy late. Jon Rahm is easy to play with. He might seem like a very fiery guy and a guy who's just kind of has blinders on. He's actually very congenial to play with. Justin Rose is as well. And when you're Rory McIlroy, when you're John Rahm, when you're Scottie Scheffler, and you know those kinds of players, I mean, Justin Rose is a legend here in the UK. He's a gold medalist.
Yeah.
In Rio at the Olympics in 2016. He won a U.S. Open at Marion. Justin Rose is a legend here in England. So that's why he is with two of the best three players in the world, because they're playing here in his home country of England. I think Rory will enjoy that pairing. I think that group is good for all three of them. I think all three of them should perform pretty well tomorrow.
Speaking of pressure, I'm curious about this. The defending Open champion is Cam Smith. He's been totally out of the limelight in the United States because he's been on the Saudi tour, which gets no publicity. I don't know how he's playing coming in. I mean, he's a really, really good player. Is there pressure on him? And do you have thoughts about how he's playing?
I don't know if there's any pressure on him. I mean, he got his title a year ago, shot a Sunday 64 at St. Andrews to beat, among others, Rory McIlroy and Cameron Young. I mean, he is a great, great player, and he is one of the top five putters on the planet. No matter what tour you play on, his putting stroke is incredible. He also plays well in bad weather, and we're supposed to have bad weather over the weekend. You never know, but over the weekend, the forecast is for bad weather. He won a couple of weeks ago, Tony, at the LIV event in London. If you are a person who subscribes to the theory that winning breeds winning, no matter what tour it's on, then I think that's going to bode well for him this week. And he knows how to get to the finish line in this thing. He knows how to handle the pressure of this event. And I don't see any reason why Cam Smith isn't a factor this week.
So the three majors so far have been won by John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and Wyndham Clark. These are, you know, Rahm and Koepka have won majors before. They are studs. There's no question about that. Wyndham Clark, it was his first. A lot of things were said when Koepka won about, you know, whether or not the Saudi tour could breed good golf anymore because there were no cuts and there were only 54 holes. I assume that's disappeared because Koepka won. But is there any sort of, in light of the proposed merger, is there any talk about still the rivalry between the Saudi Tour and the PGA Tour?
The rivalry, for sure. There's been a lot of chatter about that. But to your point on the earlier, you know, issue as far as LIV playing in major championships, remember, they started the year at the Masters. Koepka had the 54-hole lead.
Yeah.
Patrick Reed played well. Phil Mickelson was runner-up that week. And then the PGA Championship happened at Oak Hill, and Brooks Koepka got that win. So I think that the thinking of LIV guys not being prepared to play in these major championships has subsided because of the success at the first couple of majors in particular. Not so much at the U.S. Open, but the first two majors for sure. As for the rivalry goes, I don't think that there's a lot of talk about the rivalry. I think there's just a lot of talk about what's going to happen.
Right.
Like, I just saw Lou Eustace. Okay? Like, Lou Eustace, Tony, he's one of the nicest people you've ever met in your life. All right? He won an Open in 2010 at St. Andrews. And I haven't seen Louis in months because he's gone to LIV.
Right.
And he looks at me, drops his putter, and looks at me and goes, "Hey, we can hug again. Everybody's coming together again." And he's just kind of joking. You know, and I was catching up with him a little bit, a couple of the other guys who I haven't seen in a long time because they're on LIV, and we don't cover LIV. And, you know, they're more interested, Tony, in what's going to happen. How's this going to play out? Is LIV going to be a viable option for them to continue to play, or is the PGA Tour in this new merger, this new partnership, going to swallow up LIV, and then they're going to have to either qualify to try to get back on the PGA Tour or have their suspension extended and then allowed to come back if they're a certain world golf ranking, whatever that case may be. The curiosity of what's going to take place has kind of taken over the rivalry part of both sides, if that makes any sense.
It does. I mean, I'm going to ask this. It's going to sound hopelessly naive, I suspect, but you're out of the country, okay? So you're in England, where one would presume, or at least I would presume, that Saudi PGA Tour thing has a certain greater balance than it does in the United States, which is why I'm asking, do you have a sense, do you get this sense from people like Oosthuizen or other people, that this is going to happen, that there will be the opportunity – to reunify?
Yes, 100%. I think the PGA Tour players believe that, and I think that also the guys who are going to the LIV Tour are also saying the same thing. Look, Tony, here's the deal. It's very simple. There are a couple of things in life that are undefeated, all right? Money is one of them.
Yes,
and Piff
yes.
Piff was going to swallow up the tour.
Yeah.
They were going to eat up the tour. They were not going to be able to conduct business the way the PGA Tour has been able to conduct business for the last six decades. Something had to give. That's why this merger and this partnership, leading the way by Jimmy Dunn, had to happen. The part that nobody likes about it from a player standpoint is that they didn't know a thing about it.
Right.
And I think they now have an understanding that when you're doing business deals that are worth, you know, tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in the future, how many people can really know about these things? And you have to keep your, you know, your stuff tight before it actually gets released. So I think that's the part that, you know, has upset the players. But every one of them on both sides, whether you're on whether you're a LIV guy or whether you're a PGA Tour guy, all of them have said that they do think it's going to come together, and they do think it's going to come together in relatively quick fashion. I think LIV is going to exist coinciding with the PGA Tour in 2024, but I think most people think that by January of 25, most people in the world of golf, I mean, by January of 2025, most people think that there's going to be one, not two, elite tours in that stature, in that stratosphere.
Yeah, so I'll get you out of here on this. Greg Norman and Jay Monahan have both sort of looked like they, you know, were not in control of what they were supposed to be in control of. Do you think both of them will retain their positions within the next 2 years?
I don't think there's any way in the world Greg Norman is going to be a part of anything that has the PGA Tour label on it.
Right.
There is a major, major, major disagreement between the people with the PGA Tour and Greg Norman and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think Greg will be out. Jay Monahan is going to fight for his job, Tony, but I just don't see how he wins that battle. I just think that there's too much trust that has been lost amongst the best players in the world. Now, he could battle his way back and earn that back. Jay's a very good man, Tony, but he's in a brutally difficult spot. If you take Manfred, Bettman, Silver, and Goodell, they work for the owners. They collectively bargain against the players, or with the players, if you want to say it nicely, and they're on opposite sides of the table.
Yes.
The tour is different. Jay Monahan works for the players, Tony. He doesn't work for owners. So he has to answer to the players, and the players have a majority of seats on the policy board. So if they want to remove Jay, they can do it. And I think that seems like where it's headed right now, but I do think Jay has some time to perhaps recover, especially if the deal is something really positive for the best players in the world who remain loyal to the PGA Tour. But if it wavers a little bit, I don't see how there's any way he survives and stays the third commissioner of the PGA Tour. I think there'll be a fourth one in place in 2024.
I agree with you. You want to pick a winner for us just out of the hat, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a few guys I like. I like Colin Morikawa.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ricky Fowler a lot.
Really?
And I think a couple of guys off the board, Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood, I think is going to play well as well. But I think it could be Ricky and Colin Morikawa coming down the stretch on Sunday. And, boy, that would make for some good TV.
I'll point this out to you, which I'm sure you know.
Speaking of good TV, Tony, one second. Did you happen to see the Steph Curry? I heard you with Wilbon on Monday. Did you happen to see the Steph Curry finish? That was insane.
I saw it, not live. I mean, I saw the replay. I saw how it worked.
Gosh.
Yeah. That was
incredible.
It was exciting. Those four guys you've picked, if I'm not mistaken, there's not one of them over 6 feet tall. They're smaller fellas. Is that because it doesn't require great length on this course?
No. I think if you have length, it's always an advantage. I think the key this week, a couple things. Second shot, so iron play.
Right.
And I also think the kind of player this week who is going to compete and win is a conservative player, a patient player. If you hit it in a bunker, someone told me earlier today, I was talking to Darren Clark, who won the 2011 Open Championship, and we were walking a couple of holes early this morning, and he said, there isn't a single fairway bunker. If you happen to roll it in there, if it happens to find one of those fairway bunkers, not one on the golf course, where you can hit it onto the green from there, from the fairway bunkers, not the green
right,
side bunkers.
Right.
And I was like, wow. He goes, so it's going to require patience, and it's going to require conservative play. And I think some guys are going to try to overpower the golf course and try to get the ball past those bunkers, which they can. But if you become too aggressive here, you'll get yourself in a ton of trouble. The scores are going to be good. I think the winning score is going to be somewhere between 15 and 20 under par. But it doesn't mean that it's an easy golf course. And I think the conservative players like Ricky, like Colin, guys who don't take a ton of chances. By the way, that's how Tiger and Jack won all their major championships. Hang around, hang around, hang around, hang around, then pounce. That's why I like those two. I think those two are the two of the best players who play conservative golf, and this golf course, I think, requires that.
We will be watching. Enjoy the golf, and mostly enjoy the hotel.
Yes.
Enjoy probably the back bar at the hotel. That's probably where you're headed. Thank you, Steve.
Three of the great words in the English language, heated toilet seat.
Steve Sands, boys and girls, we will take a break. We'll come back with Pat Forty and a bunch of crazy stuff in college. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is, again, Jackie and the Treehorns. This is a song called Edgewater. This is an instrumental.
Yes.
By Jackie and the Treehorns. You can see them Friday night at Zen West in Baltimore. You can see them next Friday at the Reunion Summer Shows at St. Stephen's Church on Newton Street in Washington, D.C., Newton Street Northwest. And you can see them Saturday, August 5th at the Quarry House Tavern in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. And, you know, if you use the word quarry, I think of the Quarrymen.
Of course,
you know,
yes.
I mean, everybody thinks of the Quarrymen,
yeah,
obviously.
John and Paul.
All right, so we were supposed to have Pat Forty on today, and we cannot connect with Pat. That's not going to work for us. So I will tell you, we were going to talk about the Alabama baseball coach who is implicated in betting on college baseball games and was fired and is never going to get another job.
Does not appear to.
He's not going to get another job. We were going to talk about Tennessee deserving to be, you know, suspended and taken out of bowl games, and that didn't happen. They just got fined. And Pat wrote in Sports Illustrated that we're in a new day now, that really doesn't matter what you do. You're going to get fined. You're going to get hit monetarily, but you're not going to get suspended. We were going to talk about Northwestern in light of Pat Fitzgerald and whether he will get another job or not, and in terms of the students who are now sort of suing. They're not sort of suing. They're suing Northwestern and what this means for Northwestern. And we were going to talk about a story that Mike and I did on PTI yesterday that I found very interesting, which is the second-year coach at Oklahoma, football coach at Oklahoma, who took over when Lincoln Riley left to go to USC, Brent Venables.
Venables, that's right, yeah.
He took out after Dion. He very specifically said, well, at least I didn't give my players pink slips like Dion did. I gave them a grace year. I kept everybody on the team. I didn't get rid of anybody. That was a grace year. Well, he also went 6-7. He inherited an 11-2 team, and he went 6-7. First losing season Oklahoma has had in 24 years. If he goes 6-7 this year, he can have another grace year and another 10 after that out on the street because he's going to get fired.
Yes,
this is Oklahoma.
Yes.
This is not Colorado. Colorado was 1-11 last year. Colorado hasn't been good in a long time. And he took out after Dion, and you think to yourself, why would you name Dion in this very specific way? It's not like Dion Sanders ever said, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to work with what I've got.
Right.
Deion Sanders said, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to bring a lot of Louis Vuitton luggage, and I'm going to tell these people to get out because they were 1-11.
1-11, yeah.
Deion has, there were 85 scholarship players going into last season at Colorado. 10 remain.
10.
This is called cleaning house. Deion has recruited people from the transfer portal. Deion has recruited people from high school. Deion Sanders, he's no shrinking violet. You don't have to ask him twice about what he's going to do. This was his plan all along.
Yes.
And it is hard for me to believe that the people who hired him at Colorado are somehow surprised by this.
Or disappointed.
They're not.
Yeah.
No, they were 1-11.
Yeah.
If their players were any good, they wouldn't have been 1-11. And if Deion, and it's a bad team, if Deion were to win 3 games this year or 4 games this year, then what is Brett Venables going to say about that? Because that would be terrific. Look, I like Deion Sanders. I've known Deion Sanders for a long time. I like him. I like him on television.
Offered you that burgundy suit, didn't
he? Burgundy suit. I said, oh, man, I can't wear this suit. And I wish him all the best. If it doesn't work, you'll know.
Yeah.
You'll know in 2 years. If he's 1-11 and 2-10.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
But Venables.
But Venables, again, inherited an 11-2 and went to 6-7 and somehow has cast himself as Mahatma Gandhi. What are you talking about? So I wanted to talk about all these things with Pat. We cannot reach Pat. I know that these things will be out on the table at some other point, and we'll get to them at some other point. And in the meantime, we'll just do a short show, and we'll tell you that coming up next is Email and Jingle, and I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is such an honor.
It really is.
It's an honor. This is the Missouri Marching Band.
Marching Band, yes.
That's a tremendous honor.
I was just thinking that's one of the coolest things that we've ever had happen for the show.
It's
love
great,
that.
It is. It's a great honor. They got the whole band to do this. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com. For the location in the D.C. area nearest you, then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
All right. Small story about today's lyrics. Here are the lyrics. I got to get to rock and get my hat off the rack. I got the boogie woogie like a knife in the back. So be my guest. You got nothing to lose. Won't you let me take you on a sea cruise? Ooey, ooey, baby. That's Frankie Ford.
Yes.
And Nigel said to me the other day, I'm not sure you're going to get this one. And do you want to tell what happened?
Well, yeah, because there's a sound effect that begins that song.
Ooey,
that,
ooey, baby.
Yeah, it's like a ship's bell or
something.
That.
It's a cruise.
So I say a couple of lines. You immediately get the song. Then I'm in the studio, and you come up and say, and by the way, here's the rest of the song.
Yeah, because it's in my head. Yes. It's stuck in my head. I can't remember the quarterback's name for the Tennessee Titans. It took me 4 minutes to realize it was Ryan Tannehill the other day. But if you say Frankie Ford and C-Cruise,
you've got it.
I understand that. Thanks to our guest today, Steve Sands. Thanks to our sponsors, Indochino, ZipRecruiter, SimpliSafe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey if you get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. So we've had a lot of mail about cruises, because I said the other day I was thinking about
this river cruise
in Europe. All right, this is from Scotty Baker, Berrien Springs, Michigan, who says he's the unofficial Egyptian archaeologist of the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Ooh.
You know, and I took Egyptology courses in college, so I know about this. I've only been on one cruise, a Nile cruise, 3 days of bliss, only a few hundred people on the boat, and most you only see at mealtime, although that can be mitigated by going early or late. Sitting on the top deck, both shorelines in clear view, as a soft breeze calms and cools, is really an experience of a lifetime. The best part of a river cruise is that basically your hotel travels to a site. You get off, see the site, you get right back on into air-conditioned bliss. No pools on deck means few kids and no guy in a Mickey Mouse suit trying to sell you a photo. However, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a Nile cruise for you. The food is really not that good. And each trip includes the obligatory belly dancer and whirling dervish. Also, not many golf courses to play along the route. However, I do recommend the experience if you can find the right trip, perhaps one with two bathrooms. From Benjamin Madrell, this is stapled together. It's no river cruise, but 4 days broadcasting from Gazebo Row seems hard to pass up. This is the Hallmark Channel Christmas cruise.
This seems like has to happen.
Oh, my God. The holiday cruise, created in partnership with immersive festival expert Sixth Man, will feature Christmas crafts, activities, appearances from Hallmark stars, and more. Here's a quick overview of all the fun. Christmas cookie decorating, Christmas karaoke, ugly sweater contest, Hallmark Channel wine tastings, light the night sail away ceremony and tree lighting, photo opportunities and behind-the-scenes panels with Hallmark Channel's stars. It's departs Port of Miami, day one, day two, day at sea, day three, Nassau, Bahamas, day four, day at sea, day five, arrive Port of Miami.
5 day tour.
I'd honestly kill myself. I mean, I would choose to kill myself. I just can't. That's not for me. A haiku from Shad. Cruising the river, a smaller Petri dish is still a Petri dish. Or is it Petri dish?
Petri, I believe, yes.
From David Ladder. I'm a longtime listener ever since you were on WTEM. Anyway, I vacationed on a riverboat cruise in Europe during June 2019 on the Danube River from Passau, Germany to Budapest, passing through several parts of Austria, which was breathtaking. There are approximately 170 passengers and maybe 40 to 50 employees of the cruise line on the boat. You can always see land with unbelievable small towns, which you would not see on a large cruise ship on the ocean. The best thing about the riverboat cruise is they park in town where you are going and don't have to take another small boat as on a large cruise ship.
Give it
a shot. There's lots to see. From David Ladder. You know, I don't just want to do antiquity. I want to play golf.
You want to play golf. Yeah, there's got to be a golf.
Well, there is. This Joe Jacks was telling me about there is a golf cruise.
Okay.
From Rory Kimberlin in Gardner, Maine, who emails us frequently. If Mr. Tony goes on a river cruise, I hope those fingers remember to type. That is a book that needs to happen. Admittedly, if I were on that trip, I would remain in my room for fear of my portrayal in said book. Personally, I'd love to see you start with a Mississippi casino cruise. Ooh. That would feed Thursday shows for a year. I'm not doing that. From Chris Campbell in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Perhaps you haven't heard, but Ritz-Carlton has their own yachts. The Evrima Evrima set sail in 2021 and has up to 298 guests in their suites. No regular cabins here. While the website doesn't specify, I would think this is a two-bathroom situation.
Oh, yeah.
And they might even have heated toilets and bidets. There are 5 first-class restaurants and 6 lounges. The ILMA comes online next year. The ILMA, I guess that's another one, but 448 guest capacity. This is truly cruising with one percenters. I don't want 448.
No, you limited crowd.
When I was a women's college basketball coach, many of the AAU and other non-scholastic off-season sporting events were played on college campuses. However, in 2011, the NCAA enacted bylaw 13-11-1-8, which eliminated such events. There were some multiple sports facilities with a number of courts and fields. The one at Disney World was one of the most famous, but a number of events took places in college like Maryland, Penn State, etc. However, in the last 12 years, there have been a large growth in these multi-sport facilities, with Spooky Nook being the largest and one of the shiniest. Just think of a sports facility with leather seats and heated steering wheels. From Alex Tinio. Martinsburg, West
yes,
Virginia.
Yes, from West Virginia. Yes, we love Alex.
Liz attempting to put you at ease with her recollection of a 3-hour tour, but if I'm not mistaken, Gilligan was on a 3-hour tour.
That's a fair point.
From Bill Farley in Ashland, Pennsylvania. I've been on a Viking river cruise that had 180 people on board, 20 short of capacity. Most of the travel was at night while we slept. Went to bed in Budapest, woke up in Vienna. I'm 76 years old, had all the trepidations you have about cruises, and I had a great time. We'll absolutely do another river cruise. By the way, the Danube is not blue. The biggest problem for me was the 8-hour flight from Munich to Newark, New Jersey. Check with Viking to see if they have cruises directed at golfers. I know they have cruises aimed at bikers. Viking does have cruises in the United States on the Mississippi River. That's very nice.
That is. It's good intel.
From David Parsant in Palm Beach, Florida. I really enjoyed Liz's story about taking a Seine River cruise in Paris with her dad. I also thought those were corny, but after a few trips to Paris, I decided it was time to try it. You've got to book the pricey dinner cruise to avoid the flip-flop and fanny pack crap. You got to avoid the flip-flop and fanny pack crap. I can honestly say it was one of the most magical experiences my wife and I have shared. We sat most of the time in silence, not the awkward silence we usually sit in, but a loving and peaceful silence. We went by the Eiffel Tower as it sparkled. The string quartet played Ave Maria as we cruised past Notre Dame. Halfway through the meal, my wife took my hand and mouthed words, "Thank you." And for at least 3 days afterwards, she didn't once give me that "you're a dope" look that I've gotten so used to.
Well done.
Brian Deaton, Lexington, Kentucky. So you're actually considering a vacation combining flying and cruising, both of which you hate? What's next, a pumpkin tasting with Raju Narasetti? From Jim McNicholas in West Grove, Pennsylvania. I have a similar temperament as you and was skeptical about taking a cruise. God forbid being on a Disney cruise with 6,000 screaming kids. They are my employer, but no, I'm not.
Yeah, you're not going to do that. That's
no,
not for you.
No. But a river cruise with 140 guests and crew was a wonderful experience. I would recommend the wine specialty cruise on the Uniworld Boutique River Cruise Collection. Excellent river cruise down the Rhone River in the south of France. You get a guided tour of the Burgundy and Provence regions with choices of daily guided activities visiting vineyards, Rome ruins, truffle farms, cooking class, etc. The best part of the experience was the onboard sommelier and the curated wines from the local vineyards with dinner. Country Club pours. Oh, those are big. They're like 8 to 10 ounces. As the cruise was all-inclusive, no nickel and diming of guests. Service was excellent. They pick you up and return you to the airport in a private car. Stress-free departure and return. My tip would be to upgrade to a suite for more room and to use the intimate bar in the rear of the vessel. By using the bar in the rear of the vessel, it was similar to having a private room at your country club. Everyone stays in the bar, lounge, and dining room at the front of the vessel. You and your travel companions have a quiet setting with your own bartender in the rear. Mm. I've had the opportunity to travel the world for business and become very jaded about the state of traveling currently. The cruise line and their service was a first-class experience. I highly recommend. I am sort of taken aback by how many people who listen to us have had this experience.
Yeah.
And who write in and tell me about it and either recommend or do not recommend it. You never know when you're doing the show, who's listening?
Right.
You don't.
Yes.
And I am always buoyed by the fact that we have smart listeners.
Yes.
Who have means and who still listen and can talk about things like this. I'm very grateful for that. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You know, they all get involved and they all got their gear already, and so they're going to be all colored up in the maroon and you're black and yellow.
We'll be right back. find a yard to fly their kites. The kids growing up in the local school district. Their social life public.